Okay, well, all of you know again what that little intro means. It's time again for one of our little fireside chats, as I'm like to call them, even though I'm actually not sitting by the fire, and were I doing that, I'd probably be sweating my padooties off, although it did turn kind of chilly today and rain. It's certainly not fireside weather yet, and probably won't be for a while since summer is approaching, supposedly. The topic today is going to be one of some rock trivia stuff, along with a few of my commentaries about social scenarios that I've just really peeved about, and this is going to be a bitch session. So for those of you who don't want to hear me rave and rant, or don't want to hear about various rock trivia issues, then feel free to turn me off now and go back to watching Days of Our Lives or some other interesting television show you may be more inclined towards. For those of you who might have recognized that classic that I did, most of you will probably know that if you're a classic rock buff off the Cream Disraeli Gears, I think, was the recording it was off of, if I'm not mistaken, circa 67 by Cream. The song, however, was not written by them, and if you look on the credits on the album, I think it gives credits to an Arthur Reynolds, who is better known as quote-unquote Blind Joe Reynolds, and I believe the original blues recording was done in 1929, if I'm not mistaken, off an old one of those 78 RPM records kind of dillies. So this is a guy who is one of the old-school blues guys who hasn't really gotten a lot of publicity so much as people might know folks like Howlin' Wolf or, you know, perhaps, Robert Johnson or some of those folks. But this person evidently had a thing for women blues because my understanding is he's got a bunch of song titles with the words woman blues in it, whether it's Cole Woman Blues or Third Street Woman Blues or Goose Hill Woman Blues. I guess the guy had a lot of women's problems. Da-da-da-da-da, all you pretty women's, which of course is the lyrics to another famous blues song, Hoochie Coochie Man, which is one of my favorites, which most of you, if you've heard it and you haven't heard the Clapton do it off one of his blues records or one of his live records, you've heard it back in probably around 69 when Allman Brothers did their first recording, where they did a very, very creative version of that, which I thought was really cool. So a lot of your rock folks started out certainly being influenced by the blues, and this is going to be as no surprise to anyone because, even the guys in Deep Purple, basically said they were bad. I think John Lord was the guy, the keyboard player who passed last year. Said that they were basically, their roots were in the blues, and they just sort of like, roughed them up a bit and changed them around, and constantly doing experimentation. But their roots, very much like many of your heavy metal bands, including Black Sabbath, lie in the blues. I mean, certainly Clapton's riffs are, although I wouldn't consider Clapton heavy metal. He certainly is hard rock, and certainly among the four, Cream was amongst the forerunners of the the powerhouse trio, but, again, I wouldn't classify them as a powerhouse trio per se because they were so much more than just three guys playing loudly, although I'm certain that they did that. having never seen them in their heyday, that was a little before my time, but thankfully I was able to get seats to see them when they did a reunion tour at Madison Square Garden a couple of years ago. That was really amazing. Most of you, if you've seen that, you've probably seen their shows from the Royal Albert Hall, in which Clapton doesn't use his wah pedal, which is really kind of disappointing, although he did definitely use it at Madison Square Garden. So all the folks who were missing the wah pedal on White Room and various other songs, He had it in at Madison Square Garden. He was using it very nicely. Thank you very much. Most of you folks, of course, if you don't know what a wah pedal is, if you've heard Hendrix's, I can't think of the, oh my Lord, I'm having a brain fart. Now this is really embarrassing. Voodoo Child, sorry. Gosh, boy, somebody needs to bitch slap me. that's probably one of the more well-known wah-wah songs, if you will, wah pedal songs out there. It's most of those guys used very old school sort of Vox pedals or Vox related, based on a Vox or some platform similar to that. And I don't remember all the terms for the technical little caps that the resistors they used to use and all this kind of stuff. But there's evidently an art to making those things, because I can tell you, being sort of a wah pedal snooty kind of guy myself, I've gone through quite a number of them, and the best one I found on the market that I really, really liked that's currently being made, although I like a lot of wah pedals and I don't want anybody to feel slighted that I don't mention your wah pedal, but you know, the real McCoy, which is a pedal I think made out of either Washington State or Oregon, I can't remember where the, but it's sort of a boutique pedal. And that really is the name of it. And, you know, you can Google it or get on the internet and find. They have like a jillion versions of this pedal. And it's really old school stuff. And if you're an old school classic freakazoid like I am, you will definitely appreciate their wah pedals. If you can get your hands on an original Vox or Italian-made wah pedal, obviously, that's a good thing also. But in terms of more modern stuff, I really, 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 really like that pedal a whole lot. The only other pedal that I found that I really, really kind of flips my switch is, believe it or not, some of the Line 6 emulations on some of their amplifiers have emulations, digital emulations of some of the classic pedals, and some of those pedals, particularly the ones that are emulating the old school pedals, do a really, really good job, and they're probably my next favorite pedal in that regard, although a lot of people are probably wincing, going, oh my god, he did not mention a non-analog pedal, oh my god, he's not talking digital emulations, heresy, sacrilege, burn him at the cross, you know, or the upside down pentagram or something. But yes, I have to say Line 6 makes really good digital emulation stuff. I really like their stuff a lot. If you're going to go digital, that would be my first choice if I were going to do that kind of thing. And I do have several of their effects pedals, frankly, and like them a lot. But to soothe those analog people who are probably taking nitroglycerin pills, having heart attacks at the moment, I definitely prefer analog stuff. And if I get, you know, my druthers, I'm going to go with a more quote-unquote natural, organic, you've heard that term a lot, I'm sure, in relationship to tube amplifiers, organic sound, and that is why, of course, I prefer tube amplifiers and play tube amplifiers almost exclusively. And again, occasionally I'll use one of the Line 6 emulations if I'm too lazy to take something in the studio and I'm going to do kind of a one-off or two-off thing that requires kind of a weird deal. The other thing I've done in the past, particularly in studios, of course, Waves makes some pretty good emulation stuff, and IK Multimedia also makes some really good emulation stuff, and I have actually taken some of their stuff and A-B'd it with the real deal amps in my presence. And while you can certainly tell the difference, and I'm not going to say that you can't, the difference is, if you don't have the real amp next to you, I would really be hard-pressed to tell which was the real deal and which was the emulation deal, particularly if you tweak the emulation a little bit. You know, and just for pragmatic purposes, it's an, I'm not a rich man, you know, yibba dibba 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 dib, you know, I know that was corny as hell, what, you know, fiddle on the roof, what can I tell you? And I usually hate musicals, but at any rate, if you know, if you're not a rich person who can afford, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 to have every single classic amp ever made, like some of the Fender Blackfaces or the Princetons or the Marshall Brownstones or the old, you know, original boxes or, you know, Silvertones or Gretches or whatever your thing is. The closest, best solution to that, in my personal opinion, is the vast array of IK Multimedia stuff. I really, really like their studio stuff a whole lot, and along with some of the Wave stuff, which I really find awesome as well. So, you know, everybody has their deal, so I promise I did not get paid by any of the aforementioned manufacturers to PR their stuff. I don't PR stuff because somebody pays me. And A, nobody does pay me, and nobody would pay me because I'm not famous or good enough for anybody to pay. So that's, you know, reality number one. Reality check number two is, even if I were being paid and or sponsored by any of these people, which I am not, let me say that one more time, I wouldn't, because I play what I like. I like what I play, and I only play those instruments and manufacturing brands that I find appealing to my ear. And many of you folks have heard me say, you know, over these podcasts over the last year or so that I've been doing these, that, you know, everybody's ear is different. So, you know, for folks who like a certain kind of amp sound, go for it. Don't let somebody like me or anybody else tell you, well, these are really superior, they're hand-wired amps and they're made better. Well, yeah, they might be made better, but you know what? If your ear doesn't like them, if they don't fit the kind of music you play, screw that and find one that's made that you like, whether it's analog or digital. I think most of you purists are going to find the tube slash analog stuff are going to be much more to your liking. But, you know, I tell folks, go out there and sample stuff. You know, it really depends on the tube you have, which tubes you're using, which speakers you're using, you know, what voltage, and, you know, it just depends on a plethora of factors. So you really have to use your ear and let your ear do the walking, so to speak. And that's true of guitars or basses or anything else, you know, and everybody's ear is different. You know, most of you folks have heard me say before that, you know, I really despise Stratocasters in terms of playing them. I don't despise them as guitars. They're fabulous guitars. I mean, obviously, if they sucked, people like, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan and Eric Clapton and Jimi Hendrix and Jeff Beck and, you know, and numerous other folks wouldn't be playing them. So it's not the guitars, it's me. The controls are in the wrong place for me. My hand hits the controls every time and I just find them annoying as hell. I love the way they look. They're a classic, iconic guitar, particularly if they're American-made. You know, and no offense to anybody else, but caca anything not made in America when it comes to this. I'm a purist. Sorry, guys. So I don't do you know, guitars made in Mexico and, you know, Korea and Japan and, you know, China. And I have nothing against those countries, but I just don't want to make it my guitars. Thank you very much, by and large. You know, I love Telecasters. You know, Telecasters I can work around where the controls are, you know, and Teles are cool guitars. And again, it's not that they're a bad guitar. You know, I don't use Teles when I'm playing heavy metal for the most part, you know, unless I'm playing one, my John 5 Tele, which is, most of you know who that is. If you don't, he's an extremely talented guitarist that started out with Marilyn Manson's, now playing for Rob Zombie, and does a lot of side stuff too. He's really a super guy and just an amazingly good and diverse guitar player. If you haven't heard him play the sort of the breadth of stuff he's able to, you're going to be shocked. Because if you think all he can play is that sort of nasty, heavy sounding stuff, and I like that stuff, don't get me wrong, but I'm, you know, folks going, oh my God, he's playing that now. Now, this guy can do any freaking thing he wants. He's a fucking fabulous guitar player. Don't let his genre, his usual genre, bias you in an inappropriate direction. It's true of a lot of guys, by the way. But my preferential, you know, and you folks have heard me say this before, if somebody says, well, you can only have one electric guitar on the planet, one brand electric guitar on the planet, it would definitely be Gibson, no question about it. If I was going to get a regular manufactured, you know, kind of dillies, there's very few guitars Gibson makes that I don't really like. I mean, whether it's the semi-hollow bodies, the ES types, or the Les Pauls, which are probably my favorite, or the Flying V's, or the Explorers, or the Firebirds. And I know, you know, a lot of you guys go, well, Firebirds have kind of this bad rep because their headstock tends to be top-heavy. I have actually never, and I say this with all sincerity and all deference to everybody who's had a problem with it, I have never, and I repeat, never had a problem with a Firebird being headstock-heavy. I did find one that wanted to be headstock-heavy, but what I found was that if I changed the strap to one that was kind of grabbing my clothes more, the headstock heavy didn't have a problem with it. I didn't have a problem with it. And honestly, I've only had one guitar that I've even had a semi-problem with that on. And it wasn't a Firebird, actually. It was a BC Rich bass, an American-made custom shop BC Rich bass that is definitely top heavy. And, you know, I just got a gruffer strap, or you can get those straps that are weighted on the ends, and I forget what the name of them are, and I apologize for not knowing them, because they're really cool straps. They're actually weighted on the right side of the strap, inside the strap, so that, you know, they rectify the weight problem if your guitar or bass happens to be a little neck heavy. But having said that, you know, there's a lot of really good instruments out there and a lot of really good amps out there. You know, I'm particular to Marshall if for a regular production, but you know, that's the kind of music I play and I just like the way they sound. There are certain Fender amps that I like, but you know, again, if somebody says you can pick one brand of generally manufactured amplifiers, Marshall wins hands down for me. But you know, because it has the sound I like and it plays, and you know, use those for the genre. But you know, if I was playing a whole lot of country or a whole lot of R&B or whatever, I wouldn't be using Marshalls. I'd be using Fenders or I'd be using something else. You know, and I do have a Fender, two Fender amps for my studio that I'm having built, you know, because if you're doing certain kinds of sounds, you want that sparkle. They just got the sparkle that nobody else has. And, you know, they're really cool amps for that. I've got, you know, one that I use for more bluesy stuff, which is actually a Blues Junior with a speaker that's really made of cannabis. And I kid thee not, it's really called the Cannabis Rex. I swear to God, I'm not being funny. It's not one of my bad jokes, guys, I promise, okay, for a change. And it's got this great tone, and you know, you can overdrive it a little bit and do a slide guitar thing, and it's just, it's really cool. But you know, I've got a couple of Fenders that are going in the studio. I have several Marshalls. You know, I've got a vintage modern, which that to me is the best sounding head and speaker cab that Marshall's ever made. I love the way that amp sounds. But you know, I've also got what I call Top Hat Boy, because I can never remember his name because of my dumbass anomia. It's not his problem, it's mine, me being an idiot. Slash. I've got his, you know, one of his heads, Marshall heads, because it doesn't sound a bit like a Marshall. When I try to describe it to people, I try to, you know, my best description is it's sort of a Yamaha Jazz Chorus meets a Mesa Boogie. I mean, that's the closest I can tell you to the way it sounds. If you haven't heard one, you know, if you've heard Appetite for Destruction, or as I like to call that album, Appetite for Self-Destruction, and no offense, because it's a great record and I love it, and, you know, woohoo, and I love Guns N' Roses, but, you know, what a self-defeating band they were in terms of their personal life. Holy shit. At any rate, another story. But, you know, Slash's sound in there is very unique, and it sort of helped to define that sort of sound of the late 80s and into the early 90s. And it's because of the way he's got his head wired, and it just doesn't sound like a Marshall, but that's why I have it, because, it produces a different tone. You know, I also have a Vox AC30 with Alnico Blues in it, and that thing just sounds like the bomb. It's got a great combo amp, so perfect for the studio. I have a small Blackface, kind of like what's called a mini stack, before Blackface was made popular by Gus Theonopoulos, who most of you folks will know as Gus G. That really is his last name, who is, you know, the Greek heavy metal guitar player that Ozzy's been using lately, and I think comes from a band called Hawkwind, I think is the name of the band. Excuse me if I don't remember that correctly. You know, and I like that little mini amp. It's got a great little tone to it. It's really awesome, perfect for what I'm going to use it for in the studio. I mean, I have an old Lee Jackson Signature Ampeg head, which is one of the first 100-watt dual-channel amps ever made back in the late 80s to try to compete with Marshall. Of course, most of you know Ampeg as bass cabinets and bass heads, sort of the so-called voice of rock, and they really are. They're before they got sold out to the other company who then shipped them on to Vietnam to be made, you know, shame on you people. They were all made in America and were probably the best amps for bass guitar on the planet, if for any kind of rock or R&B or whatever you were doing. Most of your big guys either had Ampegs or Marshalls, or occasionally back in the day, Sun. But Ampegs are definitely the way to go for bass, in my personal opinion. But again, that's just me. I mean, if you watch the Cream reunion shows, you know, Jack Bruce is playing through a Hardikey. You know, and Hardikey makes really good amps. There's nothing wrong with them. You know, it's all in what you like, what your ear. You know, back in the day, Jack Bruce was playing predominantly Gibson SG-type basses. You know, and prior to that, he was playing one of the old Fender six-string basses that isn't a baritone guitar and isn't really a bass. It's kind of this, I call it sort of the bastard son of a baritone guitar and a Jaguar. it's a very unusual instrument. That, for most of you who don't know, they also used it a lot to do the so-called spaghetti western play, based on some of those soundtracks of the spaghetti westerns. Used them a lot evidently Ennio Morricone, who is the guy that did most of the spaghetti westerns, most of the so-called spaghetti westerns, the Sergio Leone stuff, had a guy that had a Fender six-string bass, and they're really cool. And Fender has recently reissued some of those on a very limited run basis, and I'm actually having one made for me. And they were supposed to have it delivered a couple of months ago, but evidently, while their custom shop or expert craftsmen, they evidently can't read English and put a rosewood fretboard instead of a maple fretboard. Now, how the heck you can do that and read English blows my mind if you're doing that kind of craft work that they do. But it's like, you know, what the hell do I know, right? So they had to take it back and redo the next, so I'm waiting for it to get here. So, you know, film at 11 and update whenever the hell that gets here. Took them 9 months to get the bass wrong, so who the heck knows, right? So I'm not slamming, I'm just telling it like it is. They were very apologetic and very nice about it. So, you know, woo to you. Everybody makes mistakes. But, you know, Jack Bruce is playing on the Cream Union tour. He had Warwick, you know, which is a very good German company, make him a bunch of Warwick basses, one of which I own. And I really like the way the Warwick basses sound. I love the way they play. The problem with Warwick basses is they don't do customer support worth shit. Right, because I had to make me a six string, and the neck was foobarred, and they said, "Okay, we'll you know send it back to us, and we'll fix the neck up. And by the way, you have to pay the postage." Well, that didn't set very well with me, and then I ended up buying getting one of the Jack Bruce basses, and the electronics were bad, and they didn't want to do anything about it, so I had to fork out money to get another electronics to make the bass work that should have worked to begin with. Now, in their defense, on this particular instance, I waited a year and a half to plug the bass in to make sure it worked because it was, you know, brand new in the box. I figured, what the hell, you know, stupid me. I should have plugged it in. So I'm going to own that one, right? But you'd think for a 10 grand bass, and given the fact that they made me a bass previously and foobarred it and had to make it right, and the fact that I, you know, own a boatload of money worth of guitars, you know, several of them which are Warwicks, yet think they do a little better customer support. So I currently have a letter going off to their head guy in Germany, basically giving him a piece of my very unhappy mind. And needless to say, I would never buy another Warwick again, ever. I would never tell anybody else to buy them, even though they are very good basses. And I say that very, very out of the box. But you couldn't pay me to buy another one because they don't support them. And to me, a company that does not do customer support shouldn't be in existence. Period. End of story. That's just my personal opinion. Right. There's several companies out there that have really crappy customer support. And I don't own their shit for that very reason because I, you know, when I buy something, I expect the company to stand behind. If they don't, I don't care if it's Timex watches or Fender guitars or whatever. You don't stand behind your stuff, get the heck out of the country. You know, go. Be gone. Let somebody else make them that's going to stand behind your stuff. Speaking of which, in terms of amps and equipment and stuff, I have nothing but high praise to say about people like Richard Goodsell, who is a boutique amp maker here in Atlanta, who I've mentioned on this podcast before, who just makes really outstanding old-school amps. And he made me a customized Black Labrador, which is his combo version of his Black Dog, even though he made it with chocolate ostrich leather. I told him he should have called it a chocolate lab. Richard did a lot of tweaking on this one for me, and evidently there was a mistaken cold solder somewhere, and Richard was like, "Oh yeah, bring it back, I'll fix it, whatever you need." Yeah, I mean, he was just he's just one of the nicest guys you ever want to meet, and he makes some of the coolest amps that are just so old school, and they just sound sweet as heck, and I just love him and his amps. They're just awesome. And yes, I paid for the amp, and he did not pay me to do this. Let me say that one more time. Kingsley out of Vancouver makes really good boutique amps. I have one of his amps that he did for me, and I really, really love it. It's awesome. It's got changeable tubes. It's a hand-wired amp. They're like the Goodsells are. It's a great amp. It's perfect for what I need. I recently acquired a 65 amps head, which I've been lusting after for a while, and their support at 60, you know, the amps, I was having a trouble, you know, hooking the thing up and getting it to sound like the demo, and gosh darn it, I mean, I called him up and the guy took my phone call and was pleasant as heck, and oh, let me get me on the phone when you get in front of this amp guy, let's make sure that, you know, just could not have been nicer. I mean, just could not have been nicer. and it's just, that's the kind of support and the kind of persons I love dealing with, and I would support them forever and a day. And they make really good amps as well. And there's a lot of boutique guys out there that make good amps. And, you know, I encourage most folks that if you can, if you have the money and the time to go listen to some not off the shelf amps, some of these amp makers are really making amazingly good stuff. And you're going to pay for it because you're paying for some guy to hand wire, literally sit there and hand solder stuff. But it's the bomb when you get it, and it's got the perfect tone, particularly if you're doing studio work and stuff. You know, and most of the amps I have are not that. I mean, I have a few of those, obviously, but most of the amps I have are, you know, right off the shelf sort of, you know, production line stuff or either limited run stuff. The Ampeg Jackson hand wire, Jackson amp is a signature amp, but it's not, you know, it's a limited run, but it's not a hand wired amp. It's a, like an 85, 86. That thing sounds fabulous. It's a guitar head, and it sounds fabulous. I've got it hooked to some an old 810 Marshall cabinet that Marshall made back in the day. And then when the roadies started revolting and refused to take the cabinet with 810s in it on stage, he had to end up making the cabinets with 412s in them and stacking them, which is, you know, why we have that configuration today. That was sort of a start back in the day with Dr. Marshall, who was, you know, head of Marshall Amps. And he also passed recently, and what a loss that was. It's like Les Paul dying. I mean, you know, what a bright guy and a genius. A lot of people don't realize how smart he was and how many innovations he did, including multi-tracking and, you know, recording. And he was just a genius. I mean, on top of being a really fabulous guitar player, he was just a genius in recording and engineering and stuff. I don't know how many of you know this, because I've mentioned Les Paul before being just a really amazing guy on a number of levels, very Renaissance man-esque. I don't know how many of you guys know that he was, my understanding is that he was in an automobile accident and they had to end up fusing his arm in a certain position. So he had it kind of fused in this permanent position where he could strum the guitar. It was his right arm. Well, he could still strum the guitar, and just, I mean, just in spite of that kind of stuff, just was still a fabulous guy. But, you know, there's certainly people that predate Les Paul, like Django Reinhardt, you know, who had several of his fingers cut off, and the guy's just, you know, doing all these crazy things on guitar, and you're like, how the hell is he doing that stuff? You know, people are just amazing. Some musicians are just amazing in their ability to overcome stuff and just be amazingly stellar in their craft regardless. But really, use your ear and listen to stuff, and you know, do what floats your boat, you know, whether it's bass or drums or keyboards or whatever. There's obviously a ton of really good guitar manufacturers out there, both stock and custom one-off stuff, and there's some not so good folks out there, and there's some good people that make good instruments, but they don't support them worth a heck. And you know, as I said, I got no use for that. Sorry, but I have like zero use or patience with that crap. So, you know, you folks who don't support your instruments and your artists and stand behind them, shame on you, and get off your butt or either get the hell out of the market. And you heard it here first. Speaking of which, don't you hate it when they change characters, when they take something in a book and they make it into a movie and they change the plot and they change the characters? I mean, oh my Lord. You know, it's like a band changing members. It's not the same band to me. You know, and I know that happens a lot, and I know sometimes it's inevitable, and I understand that people die, and I understand people get pissed off and quit, but I'm one of these obsessive compulsive kind of guys that when you don't have the same guys in the band, it's really not the same band. And I'm sorry, I mean no disrespect to anybody, because there's some great bands out there who have changed personnel, in some cases through necessity. And you know, and I feel bad for them, but it's just not the same for me. And what I really hate is when somebody writes a book, right, and the characters are one sex or one gender or one racial or ethnic background, and then they want to change it when they put it on the big screen or the small screen. Now, you know, I'm all for, you know, equal opportunity for everybody, but making Peter Pan, who is a boy, and using a girl, which they did for many years on the stage, right, to play Peter Pan, there's something inherently wrong with that. You know, there was a production here of a Greek myth that was done on a local our local quote unquote Broadway here in Atlanta, where they had a woman playing Jason for Jason and the Argonauts, and you know, and they're, oh, that was so creative. No, it's bullshit. I'm sorry, it's bullshit. It's not artistic. It's not creative. It's crap. Okay, I have no use for that shit. And if it's like for any of you who have seen the TV show, the Hannibal TV show, it's, in my personal opinion, it's a really, 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 really good TV show. But they've cast an African-American in the role of a white guy. I'm sorry, that doesn't work for me any more than it would work for me having an Asian guy playing, you know, Kunta Kinte in Roots. I'm sorry, it doesn't work for me, right? There's some roles that the books were written that they're supposed to be Asian people or black people or Hispanic people or Caucasian people or indigenous folks or what the heck ever. And I know we did it as you know, as a Caucasian predominant race. We had people like Charlie Chan being played by, you know, English-speaking people, and I think that's horrible, frankly. I think it does, it denigrates the role, in my personal opinion. And I'm not knocking any of these actors' abilities, because they are, you know, the actors that they've got in some of these roles are really fabulous, and I love their work and other stuff, and I just think it's amazing. But it just does something to me to see a character, in my personal opinion, misportrayed on the screen. I really have a problem with that, and I don't know why people do that, because there are plenty of excellent roles for everybody of every race, creed, color, nationality, sex, sexual, gender, orientation, everything else. I mean, have you guys seen this, the Leonardo thing recently? Oh my God. I mean, no, and it's done really, really well. So please don't mishear me. I like it. It's done really, really well. But I'm sorry, Leonardo was not heterosexual. Okay, according to my understanding, this guy was probably gay and at least bisexual. And they've got him, you know, on the first episode making love to a woman. There's something wrong with that, okay? You don't want to show his sex life? Okay, fine. I'm okay with that. I have, like, zero problems with that. Don't make a gay guy or a bisexual guy into a heterosexual guy. Don't make a heterosexual guy into a gay guy just to make a point. It just doesn't work for me, okay? So I'm a purist. Call me a snob, a purist, an obsessive compulsive, whatever. You're right on all counts. Guilty as charged on all counts. But I'm sorry, you shouldn't be doing that. It really, for me, it makes it a less enjoyable experience. And I'm probably the only person who's bothered by that. So, you know, forgive my ranting. And I mean nothing to be disrespectful or discourteous to any of the actors or aforementioned series, because I love, you know, I love the Hannibal series that's on TV now, but, you know, again, they've got a black guy playing a white role. Sorry, doesn't work for me. You know, when they change the plot, when they take the book and they make it into a movie and they foobar it, you know, oh my Lord, please, you know, don't denigrate the book. You know, if you're going to do the book, do the book. Don't take artistic license and change up stuff and, oh, it's artistic. No, it's not artistic license. It's laziness and stupidity, in my personal opinion. All right, one of the greatest movies that I just loved in recent years is because it followed the book so precisely. It was done so amazingly well. It was Peter Jackson's rendition of, you know, the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I mean, in my opinion, that was just amazingly done. I mean, if any of you have read the book, or the books, excuse me, it's done amazingly well. Just amazingly well. Same problem I have with the Sherlock Holmes movie. It's not Sherlock Holmes. It's you know, let's flip people around and do all these visual tricks and make it interesting and boom and all that kind of stuff. And again, good actors, it's a fun movie, but don't call it Sherlock Holmes. That's not Sherlock Holmes. Read the real deal, right? Read Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes. He's nothing like being portrayed in the movies. It's ridiculous. You know, and I like all the actors in there. I love what they're doing, but that's not Sherlock Holmes. Sorry. Call it something else. It's like the Mission Impossibles, you know. You know, you can like or hate Tom Cruise or whatever you want, but those aren't Mission Impossibles. The original TV series that I've seen on the rerun TV shows, right, on the cable shows that everyone, that's Mission Impossible. Don't denigrate it with all the crap oh, please, you know. Ugh, God, I hate it when people take artistic license and stuff. I find that just abysmally, there's something inherently wrong with that, right? Okay, so enough of my ranting, at least on that topic. You know, so again, back to the music trivia stuff. The piece I played that was off the Disraeli Gears recording, if I'm not mistaken, Cream redid that when they were doing their tour, their reunion tour as well. I think I remember seeing that when I saw them at Madison Square Garden, where they were just fabulous. Really, it really does my heart good to see three people who are that competent still at their age. And again, I'm not slamming them, because we're all going to get there. But being as old as they are and as proficient as they are and sounding as good as they are. And it's like listening to David Coverdale's vocals, which are still just amazingly, you know, great, or Sammy Hagar's vocals, or, you know, the Wilson sisters' vocals. I mean, geez, Manetti. And finally, they got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame along with Rush, which they should have been inducted years ago. And, oh, yeah, that's another one of my pet peeves. Oh, my God. Okay, so you're inducting people who aren't, you know, if you want to call it the Music Hall of Fame, I'm all for that. And then you can induct people, you know, who aren't rock and roll, right? But let's face it, friends and neighbors, you may like these people, and I'm not knocking the people. Please, please, please do not mishear me. I am not denigrating, slamming, knocking, or putting down the folks who are not rock, who are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But this is not the Rap Hall of Fame. This is not the R&B Hall of Fame. It is, you know, it's not the Country Western Hall of Fame. It is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And most people's definition of rock and roll is either old school Chuck Berry, you know, Carl Perkins rockabilly-esque stuff, right? Or it's rock, you know, pop rock, or it's hard rock, or it's heavy metal. It ain't R&B. It's not rap. It's not dance. It's not disco. I'm sorry. Those people have no freaking business being inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, in my personal opinion. None, zip, zero, the empty set. Now, you want to change the title of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to the Music Hall of Fame? Oh, yeah, no problem. Absolutely no problem. And if you did that, you should invite a lot of people in who, you know, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame probably would never consider, you know, who are in other genres, who I think are really fabulous, that ought to be in there. But they're not rock and roll people. You know, they're just not. They don't belong in there, in my personal opinion. And I feel really offended when they induct people in there who are not rock and roll oriented, particularly when they're snubbing other people who are ridiculously overdue, in my personal opinion, for being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I think if you talk to some of the rock DJs, you know, even Eddie Trunk would agree with me on some of this stuff. So whether he does or not, it's immaterial, because it's my opinion, and I'm allowed to have it. And the rest of you guys are also allowed to have your own opinion. And you can think I'm being elitist or whatever you want. And I'm not trying to knock these people's contribution to music. They're just not rock and roll people. You know, end of story. So get them out of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, or change the name of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to the Music Hall of Fame, or set up a separate Hall of Fame for those genres, and don't induct Led Zeppelin in them, because Led Zeppelin's not funk, they're not disco, they're not R&B, they're not soul, they're not Motown, they're not, you know, rap or country. You know, they don't belong there. Great band, one of my all-time favorite bands, but they don't belong in a country Hall of Fame. Sorry. I know they did Hot Dog, but that's a one-off. That's a fluke, guys, okay? There you go. That's my other big bitch for today, right? Besides all this foolishness about gun control, and I'm not even going to go there, because I know that people are real heated about that. But, you know, most of you probably figured out by now, I'm pretty anti-government controlling anything. As little as I know about politics, I have a buddy of mine, a really good buddy of mine in Minneapolis, who is very intelligent and often educates me about what's going on in the world, because I try not to look at very much of the world going on, because honestly, I get very pissed off at the stupidity that people do, and very sad at some of the stupidity that people do or don't do, and it saddens. So I'm either feeling really pissed off a lot of the time or sad most of the time, and I can do that on my own. I don't need to make myself any more irrational than I already am, so I just don't watch the news. I don't read about it. I don't listen to it on the radio. Unless it's just blaring out in my face, I usually let really good buddies who are news hounds, you know, say, okay, well, you know, 9/11 was bombed. You do know that, right? And don't laugh, because I didn't know about it till one of my buddies called me and told me. I mean, that's how out of the loop I am, just to give you a sense of what an idiot I am when it comes to this stuff, right? And part of that's because I really hate most politics and politicians. That they're not statesmen anymore. They're used car dealers, as far as I'm concerned, for the most part. They're, you know, they'll tell you anything they want to get elected because they want to put money in their pocket or whatever. I don't know what their deal is, but I want no part of it. So most of you know you know, my buddy in Minneapolis educated me and said, well, you know, you must belong to the Libertarian Party. Well, no, I don't belong to any party. But you know what? After his comment, I started doing research. And I'm like, yep, you're right. If I were belonging to a political party, I'd be a libertarian. I'd probably be what I would call an anarchist libertarian. You know, I'm not the guy that's going to bomb people. I'm not the guy that's going to shoot people or beat people up or whatever, because I don't consider that appropriate behavior under any circumstances. You know, violence is not kosher under any circumstance. You know, when you transgress other people's boundaries, that's a bad idea, in my personal opinion, regardless of whether you're screaming and yelling in the face or whether you're beating them up or whether you're shooting them or raping them or whatever. Bad idea. Boundaries are not made to be transgressed by others. They're made to be respected and honored, in my personal opinion. And you guys heard me say this on my last podcast about the craziness that went on in Ohio a couple of weeks ago, which is just really sad for everybody involved. So government intervention in our lives, vis-a-vis gun control or anything else in my personal opinion, internet control or anything else in my personal opinion, is them hitting on stuff that they have no business hitting on in any way, shape, or form. And them trying to redo the Constitution and abrogate the constitutional rights is beyond ludicrous and absurd and ridiculous. It's criminal, in my personal opinion. Every one of those sons of biscuit eaters ought to be jailed and thrown out of their position in government, in my personal opinion. But again, you know, I'm not a government guy. So, you know, take my ravings and rantings with 15 grains of salt and go, okay, he's just on one of his tears again. He had too much lemonade with lime juice in it or something, right? But, you know, you're not going to, I'm going to say it one time and then that's going to be it. You know, you're not going to stop violence by outlawing guns. You're not going to stop violence by taking away every knife and machete. Right? As one of my friends so brilliantly said, one of my friends in San Jose so brilliantly said, and what a bright guy he is, by the way. I love smart people. Did I mention that? You know, trying to stop violence by outlawing weapons is like trying to cure obesity by outlawing spoons and forks. It ain't gonna happen. Spoons and forks don't make people fat. People make people fat because they don't have self-control, or they eat the wrong foods, or they eat too much of the foods, or they eat them at the wrong time, or whatever, right? But the people are the problem. Weapons are not the problem. Spoons are not the problem. Cars wrecking are not the problem. It's the people driving them. Okay, cars don't have brains of their own. Knives and forks don't have brains of their own. Guns don't have brains of their own. Okay? And it's kind of like the old Chuck Norris movie, another cop or another gun without a brain. I forget the direct quote, but it's a great line. And, you know, every now and then you'll see some of these schmaltzy movies and great lines come out of them, and that's one of them. Yeah. You got to have intelligence behind anything you do, whether it's, you know, building a better mousetrap or building a better, you know, something to defend yourself with, but not building a better something to assault other people with. Bad idea. Bad, bad, bad idea. Assaulting people is always a bad idea, in my personal opinion. Just like eating too much food or eating the wrong food or eating the wrong time of day or too much before you go to bed or whatever is also a bad idea. Bad, 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 bad. Yeah, can't get around Mother Nature, guys and gals, right? And if you do, she's going to bitch smack you, right? As I often say, nature's an equal opportunity bigot, right? Nature's rules have to be obeyed by every single one of us, rich, poor, old, young, middle-aged, skinny, fat, middle-sized, male, female, gay, straight, bi, tri, asexual. I once described the guy that I worked for in Ohio's. Oh, I didn't. His secretary described him, office manager described him as trisexual. He would try anything once and twice if he liked it, which I thought was a great line, which I'd never heard before. It's funny how some of these things, everybody goes, oh, you never heard that? No, sorry. I live in a bubble. But yeah, I mean, nature's rules are equal opportunity bigots. It's like I tell most of the folks, most of my students and patients and friends, you know, no matter how many degrees and stuff I have to have after my name, if I go out in the desert and I don't get food and shelter, I don't get rest, I don't get air to breathe, I don't get water to drink, I can't defecate and urinate, I'm going to die. Nature doesn't care what kind of work I do and how many people I've helped or how many degrees I've earned. Nature's going to bitch smack me just like it would the President of the United States, or the corporate head of IBM, or Apple Computers, or the bum on the street, or the rapist in jail, or out of jail, or whatever, right? The shop owner, it doesn't matter. just doesn't matter, right? They're all of us have to apply by and abide by the rules of nature, or we're going to pay the consequences. So, you know, people need to start using some common sense and stop waiting for other people to make common sense rules for them. I just find that ridiculous, but what do I know, right? So I hope you folks have gotten a little bit of rock trivia out of this, and I apologize for some of my ranting and raving, and if it's been too much for some people, I apologize, but it really is how I feel, and you are always welcome to disagree. That's what living in America is about. And whereas John Kay and Steppenwolf said, and for ladies only, you got a right to say it wrong if freedom's to survive. And sometimes I wonder if we really live in a free country or not anymore because of the laws that people are trying to make to restrict us, which really saddens and frightens me. But what do I know, right? I'm just a musician in a rock and roll band and a guy who tries to make a living honestly and help folks a little bit along the way and help myself in the process. So the take-home rule is buy what you like. Buy products, whether they're guitars, basses, amplifiers, keyboards, drums, lawnmowers, television sets, air conditioning units, houses, cars, whatever, by manufacturers who are trustworthy, who will stand by their equipment, and who will be loyal to you and won't try to shaft you, right? Because no matter how good the product is, if it's not supported, it's not worth beans, in my opinion. And that's why I love people like Richard Goodsell, and Dan Buell of Richard Goodsell of Goodsell Amps and Dan Buell of 65 Amps. For those of you who don't know, Peter Stroud is his partner, who is the guitar player, very, very good live and studio guitar player, and has been playing, and I'm sorry, I can't remember her name, I call her My Favorite Mistake Chick. For those of you who don't know, that's one of the songs she made famous, and again, it's not her fault. She's a great performer. I just have Anomia, as most of you guys know by now, and I can't remember names worth a heck. But Peter Stroud's her guitar player, and for those of you who don't know, my understanding is my favorite mistake is the sort of the song about her affair with Clapton. I can't prove that, but I think that's the scuttlebutt I hear about the song. Same chick did a fabulous remake of Cat Stevens' first cut as the deepest too, by the way. The Cat being one of my favorite old school acoustic artists, kind of before he drop off face of earth and got all religious and funky on me. But you know, you got to follow your calling, whatever it is. And so can't fault him for that, but really, really did love his old music a whole lot. One of my all-time favorite acoustic guys, along with Dan Fogelberg, who unfortunately is not with us anymore, who did some great stuff. And you know, certainly folks like Joni Mitchell and Joan Baez and, you know, just Gordon Lightfoot, you know, just some of those old school guys, just Carole King, there's a bunch of people I'm forgetting that are just fabulous. So I'm sorry if I forgot your name. I don't mean to be rude or anything. There's just a lot of really, really good folks out there that made some great music back in the 60s and 70s. And that's the other thing I see less and less of, is more production and less musicianship, more PR and dancing and stage antics and less pure core musicianship. You don't have, as you guys have heard me say before, you don't see too many Claptons and Aerosmiths and long-lasting guys out there, and you know, Jimmy Pages and those folks out there anymore. You got all these one and two and three hit wonders, and you know, bands that are put together by record companies to make money and then, you know, let go. You know, one or two hit wonders make a lot of money, don't support them, drop off the face of the earth. Which is probably why the internet's become so replete with independent artists who are doing the thing, and woohoo for you, and more power to you. So, for all those guys that aren't here anymore, I'm really sorry that you're not. And for those guys who are still hanging in and doing it, kudos to you. Thank you for the years of doing really cool stuff and making music for all of us. And even if you're an artist that I don't like, you know, who the hell am I anyway? And if you made somebody happy with your music, that's really all that counts. And nobody else has to like it but you and the person that you made an impact on. And I think there's a lot of folks out there, you know, who would disagree with a lot of my music tastes, but I would disagree with a lot of other folks too. But you know what? If it makes them happy, God bless them and they ought to listen to it. Whatever it is, I don't care. It just doesn't belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame unless it's rock and roll. Oops, did I say that? Oh, my God. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this kind of rock trivia thing and me pontificating on some side ventings. I'll talk more about some of my guitars and equipment that I have in future podcasts. A lot of several folks have contacted me and said, hey, we'd like to find out about your babies. As many of you know, that's the name that one of my musician friends gave for my collection of musical instruments. I have quite a foundry of them. So I hope you guys enjoyed it, and be well, and be smart, and be boundary-oriented. And I'll talk to you guys later. Thanks for listening, always. Later.